and almost no complicated equations. I apologize. But, and I don't even have hardly any pictures, so it's really, you know, it's just going to be in the middle. But we started asking this question a few years back as we were starting to progeny test more and more animals and measure the cattle through the feedlot. This idea that can we actually predict the quality of feeder calves and make the good ones bring more money using EPDs? And, you know, I think one of the biggest problems in the industry today is that there's just really poor information on the sale of these feeder calves. I mean, most of us are in the seed stock business. We go to sell a bull. Imagine if we didn't have any EPDs on the bull. Imagine if we wouldn't even put our brand on the bull, and then we're going to sell it. Who's going to pay us a premium over the market for an animal that's not well identified? And yet that's what our customers are doing with their feeder calves. They take them to town, and, you know, probably as good as that information has gotten as they might say, well, I bought bulls from so-and-so and such, and I might even put in there that they're out of what such-and-such bloodline. But really, we can't expect the feeders or the backgrounders to understand what that means, let alone to know how to value that. And so we've got really poor market signals, and the reality is that good calves and bad calves bring about the same price. Ranchers don't really get paid if they've got top quality cattle. Feedlots really can't find or sort based on quality. In fact, if you ask them what they pay for calves, has absolutely nothing to do with the quality of those calves and performance of the feedlot. So the market signals that exist between the cow-calf sector and the feedlot sector are really bad. And yet we know, I mean, we, you know, if you were here and heard Tom Brink present during the opening session, you know, a $200 per head difference in value between the best calves and the average calves. So there's this enormous difference out there in the value of these cattle in terms of their performance and their carcass merit post-weaning. And so how do we get at that difference? Can we use EPDs to predict feeder calf value? Well, there's several questions. It starts with, do EPDs work? I mean, oddly, as we go out in the country and talk about this, that's still a question people ask. And I'm hopefully in this audience that we would all agree and have consensus that EPDs work. Do we have EPDs on the economically relevant traits for feedlot profitability? Now, that's a little tougher question. I'm still going to side with yes. What are those traits? Rate of gain, post-weaning gain. That might be one of the ones we're the shakiest on. We got lots of data on bulls and heifers fed under seed stock conditions, far less data on actual feeder cattle fed on a finishing ration. Okay, something that doesn't get a lot of attention in this audience, but I think something we got to be thinking about at BIF. How correlated are the traits that we're measuring in the bulls to what we really want to predict in the steers, but we're going to assume that that correlation at this point is relatively good. Yield grade, I think we're in better shape. We've got rib eye area and fat thickness. Quality, obviously, we've got marbling. Carcass weight, again, a little bit of a challenge, but we've got EPDs that predict carcass weight. Even for the breeds that don't generate a carcass weight EPD, we can put together predictions based on rate of gain, yield, and quality. Well, rate of gain and yield mainly. What that carcass weight at a constant fat endpoint is going to be. And then feed intake, if we've got an intake EPD when available. So with that set of EPDs, and then I'll come back and circle around that, but that's really what we're looking at, using that set of EPDs to predict the feeder calf value. And then the question, do we know what these traits are worth? Can we put appropriate economic values on rate of gain, on yield grade, on quality grade, on carcass weight, and on feed cost? And I think we can. And because of that, I think it's possible for us to offer a prediction on feeder calf value. There's a company out of Montana called Verified Beef. They're a certification company. When agent source verification became, you know, a big deal for Japan, they were one of the companies that pushed into that market. Who are they? They're based in Bozeman. They're actually started by Montana State University and Patterson's group there, and Montana Stock Growers and Montana Beef Network. But they decided in 2008 to go private because it was just they were trying to run it for a profit company. The university couldn't do that. Stock growers couldn't do that. So they privatized. It remains owned by Montana Stock Growers and a family in Montana by the name of Watts. And so in 2012, they were out there in the marketplace providing agent source verification. They had programs to certify natural, Never Ever 3, NHTC, grass-fed, and certified about 200,000 calves. As most of you know, the premiums in the marketplace for the agent source verification disappeared as the Japanese qualification. they were sitting there saying, what can we be doing to still market quality calves coming out of our part of the country? And we said to them, gee, this might be a nice idea to marry index technology on EPDs with what you guys have been doing for agent source verification. And so they decided to take on that project and tackle it. So they came up with this phrase, reputation feeder calf certificate. And it's basically it's an innovative way to take the EPDs, and they've got a patent pending on this stuff. And the idea is to improve industry signals, right? And there are three key elements to it. The one is a genetic merit scorecard. And what this is just a simple attempt to communicate to potential buyers of feeder calves as much pertinent information as we can communicate in as little or as concise a way as we can do it. And what that genetic merit scorecard is going to contain is a relative market value, a prediction of what this set of feeder calves is worth relative to national average. And we'll come back and talk about that in a minute. Then star scores showing the quintile rank from 1 to 5 stars, bottom 20% to top 20% on 6 traits. Average daily gain, carcass weight, feed to gain if available, ribeye area, yield grade, and percentage choice. Basically being 6 areas that would help a feeder look at that relative market value and understand the relative strengths and weaknesses of a particular set of calves and make a decision whether he's going to be able to realize that added value or see that lower value if it's, you know, half of them are below average, right? And combine that with agent source verification. So it's a high, what's the word, a high integrity program, and that the calves and the estimates are tied together very specifically. Okay, and then also come in and do audited calf management. Audited calf management means they're basically going to document exactly what vaccinations were given, which products were used, when they were used, if the cattle were weaned, when they were weaned. As they've actually gone around and asked feedlots about this, feedlots even want to know the type of mineral system being used 60 days prior to taking delivery of the calves. So we're talking about a pretty complete package here. So electronic IDs on the calves, complete documentation on the health, and a prediction on the genetic merit. Basically, these last two points being critical to helping the feedlots realize the value that may or may not be in the genetics. This is what that certificate will look like. The agent source is a USDA PVP program. The calf management practices PVP has been applied for. It's not on the certificate yet, but I suspect it will be in 3 to 4 weeks. So that'll be a USDA audited system. And you can see they're not specifying protocols. They're documenting protocols. So it doesn't matter what a rancher would do, they're going to document it. They're not going to say, you have to do 45-day weaned, or you have to give modified live shots. Or they're just saying, okay, tell us exactly what you did, provide us with the receipts. We want to guarantee that you did what you say you did, and then they'll place that, and then it has a genetic merit scorecard up in the corner. And so we'll go into kind of, I guess, for this group, how these calculations are done, specifically the genetic merit scorecard calculations. The foundation for it is a simulation model that's developed by Bio in Canada and the University of Guelph. And we're using a portion of that model which predicts post-weaning genetic merit. Basically, we're going to the rancher and gathering 10 years of data on bull EPDs. Okay? So we want a 10-year history on all the bulls that herd has used. Interesting that those bulls obviously have to be registered because they have to have EPDs. I mean, that's kind of one of the core things here. And as we go out and find ranches, one of the things that's surprising is the number of ranches that are using a significant portion of home-raised, unregistered bulls. Okay, that really doesn't fit in this scheme. In fact, the criteria in this is that there's basically a rule that for every 100 cows in the herd, there has to be 10 bulls that show up on this 10-year history. There has to be an appropriate bull-to-cow ratio. 75% of them have to have EPDs or they won't certify the group. Okay? So there's kind of a criteria there, a minimum representation. Then they're utilizing weaning weight, yearling weight, ribeye, marbling fat, and carcass weight intake, if available, on those breeds using either MARC conversions or conversions from our database. And I guess the EPDs we're converting out of our database would be Red Angus, Geldy, Simmental, South Devon, and Charlet. Those five breeds we'd be using our conversions. All the other breeds we'd be using Play Center conversions. And then standardize those traits where variance is inappropriate. As you study those EPDs, there are a couple of the breeds where, for instance, marbling score on Solaris and South Devon have tremendously more variance and standard deviation in the EPDs than are expressed in the other breeds. When you put that into the simulation model, if they're actually assumed to have more variance on those traits, the good animals in those breeds will come out far superior. And so we're scaling that back and standardizing that using the adjustments for standard deviation for that. Then there's a national base price. That relative market price is really the key. It doesn't do any good to go to a feedlot and say these are plus 80 cattle. This feedlot says, what's plus 80? You say, well, it's 80 more than a zero. What's a zero? Well, it's 80 less than an 80. Well, that's what an EPD does, right? And so it became real apparent that we had to go to them and say, this is average, and this is ranks above or below average. So we worked for a long time. How are we going to come up with national average? And the national base price is calculated taking historical average EPDs by each of the breeds, weighting that by the number of bulls registered in each breed over the last 10 years. So we're taking all those EPDs, dropping them into the simulation model, spitting out a number, and in our model that becomes 10. Everybody said, why is that 10 instead of 0? I said, if we really make this so half the cattle are below 0, no one will ever do it. Right? At least half the people will never do it more than once. So by moving the base up to plus 10, we're keeping probably somewhere around 60% of the herds, maybe even 75 or 80% of the herds above 0. Okay? It'll still be below average. Everybody knows what plus 10 is as a base. Well, actually, it may even be a little better than that. We may be just only 15% or negative. So base of plus 10. I guess while we're here, just because I hate waiting all the end, if you have questions on that, that makes sense as to what we're doing there, basically. We're looking at each of those traits. We're adjusting the EPDs all to a standardized base. We're dropping them into a simulation model. That simulation model is predicting what the cattle are worth, and we're adjusting it to a base that's equivalent to the average generated effect from all the breeds over the last 10 years. Larry, don't answer.
I have one question. When you weight those, how do you weight those breeds?
According to the number of registrations they had, Larry. Now, if we're taking total number of registered bulls recorded in those breeds, summing them up, and put that in proportionately. Okay? That obviously makes the assumption that those bulls that are registered are getting used in commercial herds proportionate to the number of registrations. I don't know how to bias it any differently than that. So that's the way we're doing it. So, you know, ranchers ask us, how do you select for this? Basically, you know, the bulls that rank high on the index or the simulation model are the bulls that are high on post-weaning gain, high on ribeye and marbling, low on fat, high on carcass weight, and better on feed efficiency. It's interesting. I took the 2,500 Simmental bulls that were born in 2012. We're over 0.2 on yearling weight accuracy. That brings up about 2,500 bulls. If we run the simulation model that drives the pricing model on the calves on those bulls, that resulting index value is correlated 82% to Simmental's terminal index. Simmental's terminal index, if I'm right, weight can contain some calving ease and some pre-weaning growth, right? So that'd be why it would be down around 81 or 82%. Looked at correlation on Angus bulls. This was just a sampling of about 1,800 2012 born bulls that scanned the gamut of traits on those above traits. We got about a 91% correlation to dollar beef. Just to give you an example, for those of you that are yearling, or those of you that are Angus breeders, here are two Angus bulls that among that population we sampled would represent the highest indexing bull and the lowest indexing bull in that analysis. Okay, just looking at 1,000 bulls, or 1,800 bulls or so. So the high bull was 68 on weaning, 120 on yearling, 1.49 on marbling, 1 on ribeye, minus 0.026 on fat, plus 49 on carcass weight. The low bull in that analysis was 25 on weaning, 34 on yearling, only 0.28 on marbling, 0.06 on ribeye, 0.06 on fat, and 2 on carcass weight. The predicted calf value difference between those two bulls' progeny was approximately $260 a head. Okay? So they would represent extreme values, which would be generally, I think, within the range that Tom Brink was talking about the other day. Okay, that's just within a breed. Doesn't express the full range of crossbreeds. And obviously, as we go to different breeds, that would extend. But there, that shows you, you know, how the index serves those cattle. So what does the rancher do to participate in the program? They contact Verified Beef. Verified Beef asks them for a release of ETBs from the relevant association. So those of you with breed or breed associations will expect that Verified Beef will be starting to contact you to say, for non-members who bought registered bulls from your association, they'd like to receive a spreadsheet on the EPDs for that member, and there'll be a release form associated with that. Verified Beef then runs those projections, the star rankings and the relative market value. After seeing the relative market value, the producer is given the option then to enroll in the program and order a certificate and source and age verify those calves or not. Because we obviously anticipate if the guy comes out really bad on the index, they're probably not going to want to do it. Probably be my guess, and particularly not want to advertise it in feedlots. Then they'll have to agent source verify. They'll have to document their calf or feeder health and weaning. They'll have to, then basically they'll provide Verified Beef with the method of marketing and the appropriate contact information, because Verified Beef will go forward and make a show list, and I'll talk about that in a minute. The cost of that, Verified Beef is charging $300 to run the market value. Then because there are electronic ID tags involved and verification, they'll charge between $3 and $7 a head. That's a sliding scale based on how well the relative market value comes out. The feedlot. So we've done a fair amount of kind of just, we wouldn't call them focus groups. We haven't met one-on-one with a dozen feedlots that have one-time feeding capacity of 2.5 million head. And these were things that they were interested in. What are the calves worth? And that's why we have that relative market value. What drives the calf value? And that's why the star ratings. They asked initially, how do you validate the system? Okay. The easiest way to validate the system for these feedlots, if they have information on the source of calves that they've fed in the past, we can go to that herd and back, basically calculate this number, and they can then compare that with their feedlot results. Okay? That'll be the way that they will validate it. A lot of the feedlots will jump right in and buy these calves, put them on feed, make sure that they do what the prediction says they'll do. So that's something that Verified Beef is offering, the score for those feedlots for free, because obviously they want to validate those numbers so that the feedlots feel comfortable going out and buying the calves. They want to know if the calves were properly managed prior to delivery, and that's why auditing the vaccinations and weaning protocol are important. And then they want to know how they can find these calves. So Verified Beef's vision on this is to support and enhance existing market channels. In other words, you know, they could come in and say, gee, we're going to try to sell these calves. They could even come in and say, gee, we're going to put feedlots directly in touch with ranches so they can circumvent the traditional marketing channel. But specifically, they've decided not to go that way. Rather than do that, the rancher will provide the information on how they're going to market the calves. I'm going to take them to so-and-so sale market, such-and-such date. I'm going to put them on such-and-such video auction. I'm going to offer them through an order buyer, and this is his name and phone number. or you can contact us directly. We're going to sell them off the ranch. However that rancher has traditionally or wants to market those calves, they'll communicate that. That'll go on a show list. That'll go on a password-protected site of Verified Beef. And they've also got outbound emails to notify buyers and feedlots of the calves that are available. So we're not trying to change how or when calves will be marketed. We're just trying to connect the dots and push more information. The idea is that this relative market value, that the phrase that they're using is, becomes a starting point for an intelligent discussion about valuing of the calves. Okay? I mean, as it starts today, you know, the typical rancher has no way to negotiate that price at all, basically. Okay? You can discuss what market is. You can try to get the top of market, whatever that is. This is going to allow ranchers who have significantly better cattle to talk about distancing that price from that mean. And I think that's important. So our question was, if we went around to these feedlots, will they pay more for better calves? The interesting thing, having been able to participate in those meetings, is feedlots were very interested in this. Obviously, the validation question is critical to them. But conceptually, if they go into the marketplace and know that here's a set of calves that are worth $100 more, they're going to pay a substantial portion of that $100 to get those calves. And at first I thought that was highly irrational. Okay, why wouldn't they just try to buy them as cheap as they can? And then dawned on me that if you bought a $100 bill for $80 and did that several thousand times a year, that was good business. Right? And that's what they can do. They can buy a product that's worth more, pay less than it's worth, still more than average market, and make more money doing it. So it's highly rational. So, you know, the rubber's just starting to hit the road on this. The first set of calves that sold with this certificate went on to Superior on May 31st. And, you know, kind of nerve-wracking. They were preconditioned and weaned calves. They'd been through a VAC 45 protocol. They were sired by known high-quality genetics. They had a base weight of 540 pounds. They were fall-born 2012 steers. They were selling out of Twin Falls, Idaho. The Superior rep, Jim Davis, said to me on the phone that the calves would bring between $1.50 and $1.58 at that sale. The genetic merit scorecard on those cattle is this deal. So the prediction was they were worth 12 cents over market. They ranked very high in average daily gain. They ranked very good on carcass weight and yield grade, very high on ribeye, just average on percentage choice. And the particular sire lines represented were very high on feed intake, and so not particularly good on feed-to-gain ratio. And that's what the information was. So that information went out via email to a handful of feedlots in the country. The information about the scorecard was read on Superior's video during the sale. And actually, that was not quite expected, but they kind of read about a 7 or 8 minute description of what this was. Those calves ended up bringing $1.68, and at least one Superior rep is very convinced that this is an effective way to market cattle at this point. So now we'll go into the marketplace and generate more. The idea is we're trying to certify 20 or 30,000 calves this year. It seems we have ample feedlot interest to test those calves and make sure that they're hitting reality of what we're predicting these calves are going to actually do in the marketplace. The feedlots particularly like when we tell them how they do it. Obviously, if they're going to buy a set of calves, you know, calves can make this differential over market for a whole bunch of different reasons. You know, they can make it on quality grade instead of performance. If they're going to make it on quality grade, you're going to sell them at a time of year when the choice select spread is going to be near zero. You're probably not going to buy that set of calves at that much of a premium. So you can sort of make sense out of those numbers, so to speak. Conclusions. The idea is simply to send clear value signals. The potential is that these producers who are really paying attention to genetics can actually get a premium for them. Feedlots can source cattle based on value. Seed stock producers are going to be paid more for better bulls. I can tell you that when we run these numbers and hand them to a commercial producer, their buying thought process changes almost overnight. I mean, almost overnight. It's also an interesting angle, I didn't put this bullet up here, but you know, you start looking at these superior AI sires and the pull-through on those animals by the amount you can actually boost the calf's value is significant. The associations, I think, you know, have a big chance to benefit. I mentioned there's a significant disincentive down to these home-raised bulls, a significant disincentive, because those bulls aren't going to factor in. In fact, if they use enough of those bulls, they're not even going to be able to get a certificate. And so this is going to push people towards the registered deal. The verified beef is out actively pursuing, at this point, relationships with associations and breeders, because you guys are the guys that know where the good cattle are, and you can refer customers back that are actually going to benefit the most. And that's what they have to find. They have to find the ranches that have the best calves, that have the most differential, so that when they sell, they'll bring the most premium, they'll actually perform in the feedlot, and then this system will get wheels. It's no question it's going to take a fair amount of confirmation by the feedlots to be going. And then because it's going to change the way those ranches buy their genetics, it will accelerate genetic improvement, and I think it'll lead to a better product in the long run. It's just simply trying to solve what I think is the biggest issue to the success of a group like this, which is how do we get the beef to actually improve without clear value signals. We all know that most of our customers are not going to retain ownership in their calves. And we just know that that's a reality. So if we can transmit a value signal at weaning time without forcing them to retain ownership, we have a lot better chance of changing behavior. Now, people have asked, you know, the first question that comes up is, this is a terminal injury. Are you going to incentivize selection for terminal traits? You know, I think we're going to focus people's attention on those traits, but for starters, we're going to reward ranchers who are already paying attention to those traits. I mean, there are, as when we run these values, these predictions based on 10 years bull battery in these herds vary the value on those calves already. The highest one we've done, I think, was a 24.50, so that was 15 cents over. We just did one yesterday that was back 10 cents. So we're already seeing, a 25 cent spread in predicted value on those calves based on the simulation model. So, and I'm sure we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of that range. I'm sure we've neither encountered the best group, nor have we encountered the worst group. And so, you know, having people zero in and focus on this, I think, is going to be significant. So that's the end of the presentation. I promise it was fast. Yes?
Could you comment on why you chose a 10-year period to summarize the bulls rather than something different?
Yeah, we're using the previous 4 years to sires of the calves, which is arbitrary, but we think appropriate. And then the 6 years prior to that, we're using that as a proxy for the genetic merit of the cow herd. Okay? There's more to it. If they buy the replacements go in at the national average, because we have no way of estimating the merit of the females. If they're raising the replacements, we take that previous 6 years as a proxy for the genetic merit of the females. Yes? We're not counting how long the bull stays in the herd, nor are we trying to figure out how many calves each bull had. It's just a simple average. Yes. Yeah. Yes?
Is there any reward or additional points gained if they're using proven AI sires? And do you account for the use of AI when figuring out that bull ratio to a particular registration?
We're factoring in the AI. The only way we figure we can make that work is to actually have them document what they bought. Okay, we're presuming that if they call you, you have those customer records and they document they bought the semen. We're going to assume, just like if the bull was transferred to them, that they used the semen. Okay, and then we're going to put that in an appropriate ratio so that that semen represents a natural service bull. Okay, and so it'll go in that way.
Yeah. But there's no reward for the act.
No, and if you think about it, what we're doing is we're averaging a pool of bulls, okay? And the average genetic merit of a pool, and we're typically talking about herds that have more than 150 cows, right? So, you know, on that kind of a deal, you know, we're going to be averaging more than 15 sires. The accuracy of that average goes way up, right? It's the accuracy of the average. And so whether those bulls were 0.15 accuracy bulls or 0.7 accuracy bulls, the average of 15, 20, 100, 150 sires is up in the 0.9 accuracy range because it's an average.
But it doesn't matter how many you're averaging, the accuracy isn't making the calves worth more.
Right, but it was, the more we average, the more certain we are of the predicted mean.
Right, but it's the weighted average of EPDs adding value to the progeny, not the accuracy of the sire.
Well, because we're assuming that
the accuracy of the sire is not producing the variance of the calf.
Right, we've still got the same spread in the calf. Some people have asked, I mean, the smart feedlots have said, are you looking at the variance in those EBDs as the variance in the calves? I don't think that's going to be a useful application of technology, so we say, no, we're not going to do that. We're looking at it, but I don't think we're going to see. One of the other things that's being asked is, will you document all the breeds that are being used? Because when you get this 10-year history, you know, there were 14 of these and 3 of them and 7 of these and 5 of those. And the diversity we're finding in very disciplined herds is quite shocking. So, you know, that might be something. But, you know, I don't know. Again, that sort of speaks to variability. It may be something we can document just so that when the buyer gets the calves, they're not surprised. Okay? You know, we say, you know, there were 7 Charolais and 82 Black Angus, then at least when they see some white ones, they know we knew what was going on. Or vice versa, if we say they were 100% Angus, and they show up and there's, you know, a bunch of red baldies and some white ones, they'll be like, huh, somebody fooled somebody here. And so that, you know, might add a little bit of integrity. So we're looking at that. It's something we'll have. The database can spit it out. It can print it on the certificate. It's not hard to do. We're looking at strategies long-term, where if people are buying females and the herd they're buying the females from are certifying, we'll bring them in with a historical genetic merit from the same way we're calculating it coming around this way. So it's shocking to me that the differences are that large. You would think when you go into these commercial herds and average their EPDs that they fall back to breed average or mean. But the surprising thing is they don't. Yeah, Dave?
Not next year, but to me, this would be a powerful program for these people who are selling large numbers of bred heifers. Those bred commercial heifers could have this value assessment.
Well, we probably won't try to go after that until the feedlots are comfortable with it.
Right.
It's a second step. But yeah, I mean, those same herds that have feeder calves that certify really high should be able to sell replacement heifers if they're, you know, if they're adequately maternal. Yeah, it goes back to the AI thing. You got a big string of heifers, they're all AI bred to a top AI bull. Here's the feeder calf certificate on the calves. The beautiful thing is we can predict this relative market value on the 2014 calves right now. The bulls went out, right? You already bought them. They're already in your inventory. They're already transferred in most cases. So, it's, you know, this is no excuse for them not to have this way out in advance. So, Mark, we have time.
We're just about right. And thanks a lot, Leah. This is a great presentation. This is the program for this afternoon. Thank you all for coming and staying with us. Safe trip home.
Well, I do have flyers on it.